The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com, a product of Sea of Reeds Media. We cover the worlds of books and streaming TV, but today I'm going to put on my Rotten Tomatoes-approved film critic hat, and we're going to talk about the best movies of 2024, and I have two of the best film critics in the United States of America. Let's face it, in the world, here with me today, we have Stephen Garrett, who is our chief film critic for Book and Film Globe. He joins me from New York City. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
And we have, we'd like to welcome back Sarah Stewart to the program. Sarah has not been writing for us much lately. She is in graduate school, becoming a better, more intelligent person. But she still goes to the movies, and she joins us today from the woods of Western Pennsylvania. Hello, Sarah Stewart.
Hello.
Hello. All right. So let's get right to it. I think, personally, like looking back at the lists you guys made and the list I made and the list that London Faust, our other film critic who I enlisted to do this project with us this year, made, that this was a really good and interesting and possibly transitional year for movies. We had a lot of indie directors making interesting films. We had a lot of fun mainstream movies, even some of the sort of Hollywood is much derided for IP dependence and making sequels, but there's some really good IP sequel movies this year. And the one I wanted to start talking about was Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, which I ended up including on my list because Stephen in London put that movie on their list. And I was like, you know what? Yes, that was one of the best movies of the year. So let's talk about Furiosa. Stephen, why did you include that?
You know, looking back at the movies, I don't believe in best movies or worst movies, but I do believe in movies that kind of stick with you and kind of make your eyes pop and think, oh my God, I've never seen something like that before. I can't shake that. I can't get it out of my head. And Furiosa was absolutely one of those movies. It wasn't as good as its predecessor. I think Fury Road is absolutely, I think Lennon used the word perfection, right? Fury Road is essentially perfection. Furiosa is more of, and world building and backstory, which kind of dings it because it's a little more plotting compared to Fury Road, which is nonstop high octane action.
Right.
But there is a level of craftsmanship and imagination and skill and verve and excitement and stunt work that is unparalleled. And we really can't forget that. We get spoiled sometimes by what a lot of people sweat really hard to make look easy. And I think we think, oh yeah, CGI, whatever. No. This is nuts and bolts filmmaking in a way that is very rare.
There's not a ton of CGI. I don't think there's any CGI in Furiosa. There's a lot. Yeah.
It's like enhancements, right? It's CGI enhancements.
Yeah. I heard there was a little bit more than in Fury Road, which was basically none at all. But compared to most of the big, blockbuster action movies, George Miller is still doing it the old fashioned way. It's amazing to watch what he's done. Truly. I feel disloyal for not having Furiosa on my list now. Because I love Fury Road so much.
Well, this is the problem. How do you follow up Fury Road in a way that's memorable? Yeah. Because it is so unforgettable. And so I think people are taking it a little for granted. It was soft at the box office. People are like, oh yeah, more of the same. And you're like, wait, more of the same of this insane thing. This is kind of great.
Yes, and unique.
And also, how do you follow it up? You have Chris Hemsworth playing a villain, an anti-hero named Dementis.
I mean, the names alone, right, Sarah?
And I'm forgetting his name now, the guy from Praetorian Jack. I'm forgetting the actor's name now, but that guy crushed it.
The love interest.
Yeah.
And she was, Anya Taylor-Joy didn't really have a lot of lines. In fact, she wasn't even in the first half of the movie. It was like baby Furiosa, young Furiosa.
Baby Furiosa. Don't give him any ideas. Maybe that's the next one.
Oh God, Baby Furiosa, like an animated version of it. But you know, and then when she was there, she was mostly mute and you know, covered in dirt and oil. Well, oil, not dirt. Oil and dirt and sand. And you know, and she wasn't. It was kind of a subdued performance in a lot of ways. I don't know. I found myself thinking about Furiosa more as time went on, and I just decided, all right, well, I'm gonna put this on the list. And you know, one of the movies that I did not put on the list that you both did was Dune Part Two. Mm. And you know, even though, like, look, I have a lot of admiration for Dune Part Two, right? I mean, there's no question that as like sci-fi goes, I mean, who would have thought? I don't know if either of you ever read Dune back in the day.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Me too. Yeah, I read back in the way back in the day.
Way back in the day. But who would have ever thought?
And you know, having seen the David Lynch version, you know, who would have thought somebody could have pulled off this successful of a version?
This version that like really, really, really feels like reading the books. I mean, I love the David Lynch version in a sort of in the way I love like a John Waters movie. You know, it's got a lot of camp value, right? And he certainly like. It has a style of its own, and it is not a disastrous adaptation of Dune, in my mind. But I mean, it certainly isn't these movies, which are just like so have so much fealty. You know, I didn't put Dune Part Two on my list only because I don't know about you guys, but I've been watching Dune Prophecy on Max. I watch TV too. I have divided.
Well, that was your first mistake.
Yeah, sorry.
I have divided loyalties. I can't help it. I'm bi-media. Tri-media, really.
You're poly-media.
I'm poly-media. Yeah, cuz I watch TikTok too. But
you're the they them of like media lovers.
Pretty much, but I'm just a little Duned out, right? And the Dune Prophecy, there's no it really doesn't take place on Arrakis. You just kind of Arrakis is just vaguely hinted at. Whereas Dune Part Two is the sandiest movie since Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, I appreciate seeing like the mechanics of how they extract, you know, fluid, you know, water from their dead enemies, and then use that because it's very precious. This is desert life.
Is it? Because I grew up in Phoenix, and we just went to the store to get water.
You should extract your water from your enemies, dude.
I wish I could have extracted water from my enemies. It would have made my life a lot easier with the playground bullies. I'm like, I'm gonna extract water from you. I'm the chosen one. I'm the chosen one. My mother says so. Yeah, so, but Dune Part Two, you know, is, those are like big, big movies. And, you know, and there's a couple other of what I would consider movies that were sort of, there's a lot of talk, right, about how these sort of mid-tier movies for adults don't get any play. And, you know, and that our movie-going life is now down to like big things that you can see on the IMAX, like Dune Part Two, and then movies for kids. Obviously, like movies for kids were huge this year. Inside Out 2, Despicable Me 2, Moana 2, all these twos. But I felt like there was actually a kind of a resurgence this year of movies that, you know, adults like. And I actually included a couple of them on my list. I wanted to maybe talk about those a little bit. Challengers, which was Luca Guadagnino's. He did two movies this year that were both really good.
Challengers, great, yeah. Challengers, the hardest working man.
Yeah, right. Challengers, and then Stephen and I talked, I believe last week, about Queer, which was his adaptation of the William Burroughs novel. Sarah, you probably haven't. They probably aren't allowing you to see Queer out where you are.
No, it's forbidden out here. No, I really do want to see it. I love Luca Guadagnino. I've loved everything else he's done.
Well, and so there's Challengers, and I decided sort of at the last minute, even though. You know, I wouldn't have given it 5 stars at the time. I decided to include Conclave among the best movies of the year because just based on memes alone, like I'm very actively reading film Twitter all the time because, you know, I'm an editor of a pop culture website and I try very hard to stay on top of the zeitgeist, which I would say, you know, very successfully, I might add. But, you know, Conclave, the film Twitter people, they love making memes about Conclave. And about Challengers, you know, I still every, you know, maybe it's niche for me, but I still like, I like a good Phil's Tire Town joke.
It just struck me. I was not a fan. I mean, it's certainly entertaining. I see what you're saying about, you know, this kind of vigorously entertaining movie for the norms, for people who don't necessarily go to see movies and people who have other interests like Catholicism or politics or whatever. You know, it's like, this
you're
is a
about,
bit of a
You're talking about Conclave.
I'm talking about Challengers, of course. I'm talking about Conclave, of course. And I wish it were better, but it kind of feels like a mashup of, it's got that Name of the Rose vibe. It's got, you know, Da Vinci Code. It's a paranoid thriller set, you know, in the papal world. And it just seems a little silly.
It was very silly. But what I liked about it was that it was big, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like in some ways, like it took place, you know, it took place in the Vatican, and it was, I think, shot in the Vatican apartments, and it had a big name cast, people delivering, you know, real old fashioned scene chewing Hollywood performances. John Lithgow, Ralph Fiennes, Stanley Tucci, Isabella Rossellini, who will probably win Best Supporting Actress Oscar for a truly supporting performance.
Oh, yeah.
Like a 10 minutes worth of screen time performance. And, you know, and also just like, you know, there was an explosion in the Vatican.
A weird explosion. Like, it's very high. And then they're like, oh, a car blew up outside. You're just like, wait, what? Huh? How does that even work?
It was shrapnel, Stephen.
It was shrapnel. If a drone had exploded, that would have made more sense.
But also just like, you know, in a year that featured a lot of voting drama in real life, there's a lot of voting drama. One of my favorite Conclave memes was on election day this year was somebody wrote, if you're voting for Bellini, stay in line. I just love that. So, Sarah, you obviously saw Conclave. They're allowing you to watch that.
I think it was permitted. I, however, did not. I was buried in my textbooks and missed that one.
All right. Fair enough.
I wish I had had that excuse. I wish I were buried in my textbooks so that I could have missed it. Now, it's worth seeing. It's silly.
It is silly, but I don't know. I guess I've turned into one of those populist film critics. But Sarah, you did see Challengers.
Oh, I sure did. Yeah. I love Challengers. Challengers was another honorable mention for me, for sure.
Right. But what I loved about Challengers was that it was like, you know, there were some I like movies with sports scenes in it, but it wasn't like one of these like overcoming the odds to like win the Olympics in 1933 or 32 or whatever, you know, which is a lot of your sports movies, you know, guys at Harvard learning how to box or whatever back in the day. This is more like this is a modern sports movie, and it also was a modern sex movie, right?
Oh yeah.
A lot of sexy sex, or at least implied sexy sex in this thing. And it was, you know, kind of polymorphously perverse. And I don't know. I just also like, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Josh O'Connor.
Oh, yeah. No, yes. It's such a great, I mean, and Mike Feist is fantastic too. You know, and Zendaya is great. Do you know, it's funny you talk about it in the same breath as Conclave, because I see Conclave as a director who's trying to be really smart and important, working with fundamentally silly material. And I think Challengers is a director who is smart and important, working with material that in other hands would have been very silly, you know?
Yeah.
But he elevates it and makes it feel so shrewd and insightful and compelling in a way
and
that
fun.
I was surprised I'd be. And fun, so fun, the right kind of fun, where he's kind of in on the joke and he knows it. But he's also saying, you know, as funny as we're laughing, like these are serious politics that are going on among these three kids.
Yeah.
You know, I say kids because even though they're in their late 20s, they met when they were teenagers and they still have that kind of mentality towards each other. You know, it's great. It's so smart about people and about attraction.
Yeah.
You know?
And about tennis.
And I guess about tennis. I'm totally ignorant on tennis. So I was like, I guess that's right. I loved it. And those camera angles, what?
Yeah.
from beneath their feet, like you're looking up. They're these impossible camera angles that are wonderful.
It's going to get very little awards love. But I, you know, it's the kind of movie that if you love it, that you love it. And I was definitely one of my favorites this year. And also did either of you see La Chimera? Speaking of Josh O'Connor.
La Chimera, actually, I love too. I'm sorry. You know what? Honestly, Challengers and La Chimera could have very easily, I should have included on the list, on my list. Cause
we haven't talked about, Sarah, I'm guessing that La Chimera did not cross your transom.
It did not.
Yeah. All right. So, but let's talk about La Chimera a little bit. This is a movie from director Alice Rohrwacher, who is a European director, very, very like film society director, right? Like, like when her movies come out, I see them at the Film Society. They're not playing at the Regal or whatever. You know, and this is basically a movie about it's kind of a parable, comic parable about grave robbers in Italy. Josh O'Connor plays this savant who has a supernatural ability to like suss out where like Etruscan artifacts are, and he and his group of sleazy thieves like bust into caves and like steal statues and shit.
And then he goes into a weird trances and he uses like divining rods, like sticks to find stuff. And
yeah. And all this, like this Fellini-esque group of thieves, like uses him and he like wears the same dirty linen suit the whole time. Really good movie.
It's incredibly imaginative. So not to pull Italian pretentious rank on you, but her Elise Rohrocker is Alice Rohrocker.
And really?
Alice Rohrocker.
I keep calling her Alice, like Alice's restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's how it's spelled, and you know. But Rohrocker's movies, past couple of movies she's made. Oh yeah, Lazzaro Felice, happy as Lazzaro. Did you see that Netflix?
Oh, I saw. I did see that. I saw that was actually on. That one's actually on Netflix.
Yeah, I really dug that too. Did you feel? Did you like that one too, or no?
It was that. Yes. It had a similar vibe to La Camera, although I'll, you know, that was kind of a two nap movie for me at the same time. But La Camera, you know, had, because of the sort of low grade crime aspect to it, it had a little bit of a heist movie to it, mentality to it. It was like an indie heist movie. I really dug it. So I decided to put that on my list as well.
Also, speaking of fantastic performance from Isabella Rossellini.
Yes, another one.
But Rohrrocker.
Alice Rohrrocker.
Rohrrocker. Her past couple of movies, it's really weird because you mentioned Fellini and they almost feel like these found Fellini movies, undiscovered from the 70s. Yeah. The way she shoots in 16mm. These movies tend to be set in the 70s or at least feel like they are. They look like they were made in the 70s. Everybody looks like actors from the 70s. It's hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of movies that seem like they could have been made in the 70s, let's talk about Anora from director Sean Baker. I'm going to try to bring Sarah in again. I'm guessing you saw Anora. Anora was available, right?
I am so sorry. Uh-oh. Still oh my being God. Buried in the talk right, well, I've read much about Anora. So, yeah.
All right. We'll get to you. We'll get to you. Yeah. All right. But I know Stephen and I know we talked about Anora. You know, quite a bit.
It's a blast. It's a real blast. I still think Red Rocket is the best movie that Sean Baker's made. I feel like I saw Anora and I thought, oh, this is a lot of fun. I love Sean Baker. His movies are great. And then everybody kept saying, like, no, this is profound. And I was like, is it? You know, I don't know. I'm happy to jump on the bandwagon, but.
You know. I know. You were into Sean Baker before Sean Baker was cool.
Yeah,
you know,
look.
I go back to Tangerine with Sean Baker.
Oh, yeah. Tangerine's
that guy
wild.
Is brilliant. And Red Rocket, too, I think you're right.
I like the Disney movie he made, The Magic Kingdom. Was it called? The Florida Project.
The Florida Project. Yeah.
I like that one. Also, you know, Mikey Madison, she's now with us for the rest of our lives.
Oh, God bless. Yeah. Happy to have her. Yeah. She's amazing.
And as Stephen and I, we talked about this and when we discussed the movie originally, Mikey Madison, Sarah, I don't know if you remember this, she played in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She was the member of the Manson gang that Leonardo DiCaprio hit with the flamethrower. At the end, she ran like screaming into the pool. We talk about a committed performance.
Yeah, I know. That's pretty committed. But also, she has the most memorable. Remember, she kind of monologues a bit in the car before the Manson guys leave the car to commit their crimes. And it is a really, I remember being like, who the hell is this person? Like, she gets her moment in that movie. That's all performance.
She is great. And Anora is truly great, and you know, received a lot of praise in our piece. I also I love The Apprentice. Stephen,
yeah,
and I
like it too. Yeah,
I would say actually, The Apprentice was my favorite movie of 2024.
Okay,
I know that sounds crazy. You know, that was the Donald Trump origin story, and the script by Gabriel Sherman, who I believe writes for New York Magazine. Is that right? Does that ring a bell?
He did. Yeah.
He's a lib. He's like lib media guy. And you know, so this is not like a I Love Donald Trump movie by any stretch of the imagination, but the script is so smart, and it just it really, like, you know, digs into Trump's character, and there's great performance by Sebastian Stan. as Trump, and
Jeremy Strong as Roy Cohn. Oh,
Jeremy Strong as Roy Cohn. Fantastic. And also, like, I just have a, I have a soft spot for, like, 1970s, 80s New York. It really, like, if you, you know, I know that you guys read Spy Magazine back in the day, right?
Oh, yeah.
It felt like a Spy Magazine article come to life. And I just, you know, it really was like, it was like just being immersed in it. I kept expecting, you know, Kurt Anderson and Graydon Carter to be like, you know, giving me air quotes from the sidelines. It was,
but
it's a great movie.
But it's also the journey of a, like, a naive, kind of sweet guy who becomes the short-fingered vulgarian. Yes. It's an origin story and a tragedy too. Like, they don't really mock him. It's very sympathetic to him in a way I think people won't. Would be surprised, right? I certainly was.
And as I said when we talked about this initially, Stephen, I think that it's not, you know, it's very, it's not pro Trump by any means. So the so the MAGA people don't like it, and then it's not anti Trump enough to appeal to his many haters,
right?
The losers and haters, as he calls them. It was much more popular in Europe than it was in the United States.
Interesting.
Where it really, like, was kind of, yeah. They are able to be like, oh, stupid Americans.
It really is. It's a caricature, but it's also a character study.
Yeah.
In a way, you know, it's smarter than just, like, mockery.
Really good. All right. So let's talk about Jewish people and Jewish people movies. Stephen and I both included Jesse Eisenberg's A Real Pain in our survey. And Sarah, you went with Between the Temples, which we've also talked about on this show.
Very worthy.
And I thought, I thought that was an interesting, pick. Why did you go with Between the Temples?
Between the Temples just really spoke. I mean, talking about movies that feel like they're from the 70s, this just sort of scratched an itch for me that, you know, in my write up, I mentioned it. They had a little bit of Harold and Maude flavor to it, a little Hal Ashby maybe. It's just a really interesting character study. It pairs Jason Schwartzman and Carol Kane in this brilliant way, I think, and also just has some great supporting Rob Smigel as a rabbi who's, like, essentially playing it straight. But, you know, he's Rob Smigel. And just, it's very offbeat. Yeah. The humor is weird.
Triumph the insult comic dog.
Yeah. He's very muted, but also kind of brilliant.
Yeah, he was. You're right. He was very funny. Well, here's the thing about you know, Between the Temples. I did like it, and, you know, especially in a year where you know, Jews are not super popular in the world, it was nice to see, like, an affectionate portrayal of Jewish spiritual life.
Yeah.
And Jewish cultural life that was not, like, you know, the problem to me with Between the Temples was it was very twitchy, right? Like, there are lots of weird close-ups and, like,
I liked how weird and twitchy it was. You know, the editing too, I thought was the funny. It was the best comic editing I'd seen in a long time. Like
the
scene
door hinge, you guys,
eating the burgers. Oh yeah, yeah.
There's a door hinge that sounds like it's screaming bloody murder every time someone opens it. And at the first, you know, the first time you hear it, you're like, what's going on? And you realize it's a door hinge, and it's just this running gag through the entire movie that I thought was really, really well done. Yeah.
There's a lovely romance between Schwartzman and Kane too. And I thought the ending was quite touching. You know, and then in terms of a bromance, A Real Pain, you know, between Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin, who played these cousins who are basically like brothers. I'm close with my cousins as well, so, like, that relationship felt very very real to me, very kind of lived in. You know, I believed them.
Did it feel like a real pain?
I mean, look.
Hey, wait, where's the rim shot, dude? Give me the rim shot.
All right, say it again.
Did it feel like a real pain?
Yeah. yes. So, no, I mean, the thing is, like, that's another movie about Jewish identity, right? Like, these cousins go to Poland, and they're, you know, they're basically, like, paying homage and honor to their late grandmother, who was a camp survivor. And I felt like, you know, the tour of the camp that they go on was, you know, was touching, and, you know, and they didn't really, like, but they didn't slam me over the head with it. This was still a comedy at the end of the day. Like, when Kieran Culkin tries to, they like to go smoke pot on these roofs in Poland. And when he, like, goes up to the Polish security guard, he just says Glork to him, which just, like, sounds to him like a Polish word. but he says it in that, like that shit eating Roman Roy kind of way, like Glork, you know?
Who knew Kieran Culkin was going to emerge as such a powerhouse.
Powerhouse and possibly best supporting actor winner. I would say that he is.
Yeah.
He'd be my choice. So yeah, also a great movie. All right, so let's talk about. There's a couple on Sarah's list I wanted to talk about. I did not see this movie. Stephen and I talked about this previously. The Substance.
Oh yeah.
As I said to Stephen, I couldn't.
Oh right, you couldn't bring yourself to watch it, man.
You couldn't bring yourself to watch it? No way.
He's very delicate.
I don't like things. I don't like body horror. I don't like things coming out of other things. There was a movie that came out this month called Werewolves, where a billion of the world's people turn into werewolves at once. That to me sounded like the worst thing that I could ever possibly imagine. So The Substance, at the end of the day, you and Steven and like other friends of mine whose opinions I respect were really into it. But I just couldn't do it. So I'll let you guys chat about The Substance.
Well, I think it's fair, Neil, that you took a pass on this one, because honestly, I think this is the most disgusting movie I've seen in like many years. Truly. But that's part of the point, right? And I think if you can go into it keeping that in mind, you know, it goes so far over the top with the body horror and particularly like the sort of misogynist, you know, do anything to maintain your youth body horror. I mean, to the, you know, bloody pussy Spinal Taps basically. Oh, and like this thing at the end, that's like, it's basically turns into a trauma film at the end. I don't want to give it all away, but I mean, there's such
it
a
does.
Transformation.
It really is trauma, isn't it? That's really funny. Toxic Avenger for sure.
Yeah. Toxic Avenger 100%. And I just found myself laughing delightedly at how completely disgusting it was, because I mean, it hit you over the head with the message, but the message was right on, you know, it is horrifying the lengths that people will go to and, you know, injections of who knows what, just to maintain a little more youth and attractiveness. So I appreciated that Demi Moore did it. More power to her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's had some work done.
Bold. Yeah, and she is full on naked. Like she's there are a couple shots where she's looking at herself and we're looking at her, of course, and she looks amazing for her age, but she is not, you know, like Margaret Qualley, like firm, tight, supple flesh anymore. She's just who she is, you know. And of course she's had some work done, but still, like, you can't fight the march of time, as they say. I think what I also loved about this movie is it's unabashedly cartoonish. Like, it doesn't even try to be realistic. You know, it is like, do not take me seriously. I am a metaphor. Take what I'm saying seriously, but do not take how I'm saying it seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and I appreciate that. It's fun. It's meant to be fun.
It is.
Well, but speaking of looking amazing, Sarah also put Monkey Man from Dev Patel on her list, which, you know, I thought that was an interesting pick, because like, well, I feel like Monkey Man, again, I think Stephen and I talked about Monkey Man earlier this year on the show. You know, it was a very like interesting, entertaining genre pick and a kind of an original genre pick. Like, it was a mashup of like John Wick and Hong Kong action movies, but also contained a lot of Hindu iconography, right? And so, Sarah, why did you choose Monkey Man?
I think I was really in my Luigi Mangione feels when I included this on my list. No, I just, it really, it did just hit me at the right time. I thought that the sentiment of it, the rage of it against, you know, oligarchy and corruption and hypocrisy was just, it was well said, and it was well said by a guy who looks just spectacular on film and really knows his way around a fight scene. And also just includes like maybe the greatest trans women bloody brawl I've ever seen committed to film.
Right.
I mean, it just, and the soundtrack, it brought in a lot of elements that I thought were visceral in a very satisfying way at a very specific point in time, for me anyway. And I, you know, it's right there on Amazon. I think if you haven't seen it, it's a good watch for the holidays, man.
Well, what I liked most, I mean, you know, this may betray my own taste about movies, but what I liked most about Monkey Man were, I thought that, yes, I liked the vengeful trans, there were like part, there's like a, it's like a cult of like monks, basically trans monks who live in the, like in the city. And they kind of join forces with Dev Patel's character to try to defeat this this oligarch. My favorite parts were the boxing scene, were the fight scenes. They were done in this arena, And, you know, Dev Patel's character puts on this Hanuman monkey man mask. And they're just like these sleazy, like fight scenes and run by Charlton Copley from District 9, the Australian
Love to
actor.
See that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And like that character doesn't get his comeuppance, which I thought was really funny because he was kind of a villain. He's kind of like just a circus entrepreneur. And those scenes had like a nice kind of gritty realism to them that it was different from the rest of the movie, which had a bit of a sort of a mystical, almost pretentious vibe. So but there's a lot going on.
And a little bit derivative. Sure.
Derivative. Great. You know, I like a good old fashioned, you know, it reminded me of like Digstown, that old movie with Louis Gossett Jr. and James Woods, you know, just like gritty arena fighting. I don't know, whatever. I'm a guy. I like sweaty men beating each other up. I can't help it.
I agree with both you guys. I think Monkey Man was a lot of fun for me. I had a great time. And I think also just in terms of that cultural kind of awakening of seeing stories told from different parts of the world in ways that are incredibly kinetic and exciting. And also kind of introducing Dev Patel as a filmmaker who actually has some real chops and who is playing to a broad audience. I think, yeah, both of you guys absolutely are totally right.
What was the name of that, the Indian action movie on that came out on Netflix last year that was like super.
RRR.
RRR, right, like, and yeah. That, you know, sort of it's like Indian guys as action heroes is now a thing, as it always really.
I mean, always been, right? And
but in terms of like in the West, right? It's kind of like
export, yes,
as an export, right? Like, so, like in the 70s, obviously, like you know, kung fu movies became a thing, and now you have these sort of I don't know. For lack of a better term, yoga warriors. There's always I practice yoga. I went to yoga school, and there's always this tradition of these kind of yoga warriors. And I, you know, Hanuman was a warrior monkey god, and Dev Patel really brings that to life. And so, yeah, really, really good movie. So, you know, we got to wrap things up here, but you know, I don't know. Like, I'm not less excited to go to the movies now than I was when I started the conversation. I don't know about you guys.
No, it's
a
strong year.
It's a really good year. Yeah. But, you know, like you said, I think it did bring back some kind of mid-level, you know, intelligent movies for grown-ups, which people have been saying forever we need more of. So I'm pretty happy. And you guys have given me a lot to, you know, have on my list that I haven't gotten to yet. Number one being A Real Pain, which they haven't released out here yet. So.
Yeah, you've got to see that. There's just, you know, and there's lots of movies also like on, you know, subsidiary list that we haven't talked to. You know, we haven't even mentioned the Clint Eastwood movie Juror Number 2, which is now airing on Max.
Which is good, which is really pretty solid.
Which is good. And then again, we don't have time to go through all the movies on the list, but I would recommend to our many millions of listeners out there that you go to Book and Film Globe and look at the piece, and then, you know, just peruse our film archives. We do I think a really good job telling you what is, you know, in theaters, you know, both in terms of mainstream movies and we cover film festivals. Steven, you go to like 17 film festivals a year.
I got 127 film festivals. Yeah.
you see, you know, we have other correspondents going to film festivals. So, you know, that's been one of the best things about this job, which I've been doing for 7 years now, is being able to, you know, just really immerse myself in film and to, you know, talk to people who know more about film than I do, like Sarah Stewart and Stephen Garrett, and to go to the movies. Going to the movies is one of the great pleasures of my life, and I really enjoyed going to the movies this year. We've been joined by Stephen Garrett, who is our chief film critic, and he lives in New York City, and Sarah Stewart, who is an excellent film critic in her own right, although is transitioning into other professional realms, and hopefully we'll continue to write about movies for
absolutely.
Us as well. Steven, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sarah, good to talk to you again, and please go to the movies on Christmas. I'm actually going to the movies not on Christmas because they didn't have a slot available, I'm going on the 26th. I'm going to see Nosferatu.
Oh, excellent choice.
Nosferatu.
I wanted to see Rose. I'm Jewish, so I don't care what I go see. You know, to me, like, Christmas is when you go see Tootsie. You know.
Well, I hope finally, eventually, The Brutalist will arrive in Austin.
Oh, The Brutalist. I've been dying to see The Brutalist.
It's great.
And I have that 4.5 hours or however long it is blocked off. I'm ready to go. That's like half a session at the poker table for me. So that won't be a problem. All right. Well, I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor in chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more. This has been our best movies of 2024 roundup. I hope you will get to see some of these movies and enjoy them. And please read the site. And please go to our bookstores in New Jersey. The company owns two bookstores, one in Millburn, New Jersey, and one on the Jersey Shore in Long Branch. And you can read books about film or about anything else. And that's all for now. And we'll talk to you soon.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.